Okay, we're talking to Bill Hennis, who was at WKLO Radio in Louisville twice, right, Bill?
That's right. Once as the nighttime jock, Wild Willie, and then back again as the very sedate Bill Hennis, program director.
What exactly were the years, though, that you were there as a jock and then as a PD?
Well, I was there in 66. I was there for about a year. Terrell Matheny was the program director. It was the first time that I had ever talked to a program director that long. When he called me, we had like a 2.5, 3-hour conversation. It was incredible. We just talked radio. He got me so excited about coming to WKLO and the radio business and the programming business, and it was just great. Actually, it was a very meaty conversation, and it kind of was part of the beginning of me wanting to be a program director.
Now, where were you before you were at WKLO?
I was in Flint at WTAC doing 7 to midnight in Flint, Michigan. I've been at radio probably about 5 years. I worked at WIBM in Jackson, Michigan, WJEF in Grand Rapids, WLIN in Detroit, which I signed on in 1961. It was an FM that was owned by a high school buddy of mine. It was a full Class C FM, and he put all the money into the studio and getting the right personnel, and then forgot that he had a cell to make money and didn't have any money for payroll after a couple of months. And later, that station was sold to WCAR in Detroit. Became CAR-FM.
Tell me about coming to WKLO in 1966. What was the radio station like? You evidently had a good first impression talking to the program director, Terrell Matheny, or Mitch Michael, as many people knew him on the air. What were your impressions of the radio station when you first started to listen and actually start working there?
Well, it was obvious that it was pretty much a personality-driven radio station that started with some great people. Bill Bailey in the morning. Jack Sorby was on when I got there, 9 to noon. Carl Truman Wigglesworth, noon to 3. Terrell Matheny from 3 to 6. And then they had Ken Douglas, the Englishman. And then I was going to do 7 to midnight. And Joe London was doing the overnights. Everybody had their own little personality. The station was very, very different. It was an exciting radio station.
Now, had KLO moved to their showcase studios the time you worked there?
We were in a showcase studio. That was not my first showcase studio. I had worked at Trix and Flint, and they had a showcase studio. So, for me, a showcase studio was not new at that point, but for them, it was great. I mean, it was right on the street there that people walked up and down, and it was really very cool.
So, what was it like to work at a showcase studio as a disc jockey?
Some people treated it like it wasn't there. I always treated it like it was like kind of a mini television, if you will. It was a way to interact with people who heard you on the radio, and you could, on the air for me, I was always kind of the Wild Willie. That was me on the radio, and so I kind of projected that image in the showcase studio, having a great time, music loud, dancing around, waving at people. I utilized the showcase studio to add another dimension to it.
Do you have any signature bits that you did as a disc jockey on WKLO, or you pretty much followed the format and worked with it?
It was format, but it was new for that day and time. I had a feature called Pick and Play. And in those days, that was kind of a new feature. It hadn't been done too much. And people could call and select their favorite songs. So it's the first week I'm in town. Of course, I'm learning the board, and everything's new to me down there. The stab that Terrell had, which was a Sonovox WKLO. And then over that, the jocks would say, Radio WKLO Showtime, 7:45 with Wild Willie, or whoever the jock was. So I was going to utilize this new feature, and I talked to Terrell, who was the PD at the time, and I said, Terrell, I said, I want to use this feature at Night Pick and Play, where people call in and I request their favorite song. And he says, great, do it. So I had been doing it in Flint and had never had any problems with it at all because I always tried to, keep a handle on it. So anyway, I put it on one night. We'd been doing it for a few nights. It was in the first week I was on the air. Simply had a little production thing that said, call now, pick and play, WKLO, dial in. So people would call in. I'd select somebody and get them on the phone, and I would go live with them on the phone. And what I would do is I would listen to the phone after I got them on the telephone just to kind of make sure nobody was, doing anything goofy. You know what I mean? I had this one call on there, and they wanted to hear some particular song. And I had a production piece at the end of it. And it was like if they'd say, I want to hear Leslie Gore and blah, 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 it would be like, pew, no sooner said than done, 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 done. So on this particular occasion, I get him on the phone, and I said, welcome to Pick and Play. Who's this? And the person says, hey, this is Mary Lou. Well, Mary, where do you go to school? Oh, I go to school at Shively, and blah, 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 and what grade are you in? And I said, and what song would you like to hear? Which is, you know, the way the bit ended, right? So as I say that, I hear the other extension pick up. But it's like the first week, and I'm still kind of, you know, I'm not really that together on all the equipment. And I hear her, I say, so what song would you like to hear? And she screams into the phone, this other person goes, F*** you, you son of a bitch. My reaction was to hit the button. It goes, no sooner said than done. And I went into the next song, and I just sat there. The phone was still, the dial tone, they hung up. The dial tone was still running on the air, and I finally killed that pot. And I'm just drained. About 10 minutes later, Terrell comes in the studio. He pulls up in front of the station, comes in the studio. I said, did you hear that problem that I had and what happened? And I was all upset. I figured I was going to be out of a job. And he just looked at me in this great calming voice, and he said, it'll be fine. He says, just pre-record them in the future. And that was it. He turned on his heels and walked out, man. I thought I was a goner. I was out of work, man.
Oh, live radio. Ain't nothing like it, huh?
Yeah, it's one of the true stories, man.
Anything else you did at KLO on the air during your first stint that was memorable?
Well, we used to do a lot of dances. We did a lot of interaction with the high schools. We had the Coca-Cola Hi-Fi Club, and I would go out to the different schools. As I remember, once a week or sometimes twice a week to the different schools, and I would read the announcements on the PA at the school, and you know, it was a big deal. Here comes the WKLO airmen, as Terrell called us. So Wild Willie would make appearances at the schools, and it was very good because it really kept the jock's name and the station's name alive. So it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. I mean, we did a lot of dances. There wasn't a lot of what I would call, like today, remotes and stuff going on so much. But we did a lot of dances, we connected with the schools, and KLO was kind of everywhere.
Okay, so you were at KLO doing a nighttime show as Wild Willie. You said you were there for about a year, And then why did you leave?
That's very interesting. I left because Terrell got me a job.
Had Terrell already left, or he got
no,
you a job
Terrell
so you
there.
Would leave?
No, I'll tell you what happened. I showed a great deal of interest in becoming a program director. I had never been a PD up to that point. And I used to come in every afternoon and sit with Terrell. Now that I think back on it, he probably hated it, but he never said a word. I would come in about 3. He got on the air at 3. I'd come in about 3:30, 4 o'clock. And I would sit and talk to him for about an hour to an hour and a half each day about programming. And why do you do this? And why do you play this song here? And how come you run this? Why don't you play oldies that go back further than? Or why do you play back so far? You know, I'm just asking lots of programming questions. And I was picking his brain, and it became obvious to him that's what I really wanted to do was to become a program director. That I had aspirations above and beyond that. He had gotten a call from a fellow named Bert Sherwood in New Haven, Connecticut, who was going to hire a friend of his, who I think was also an alumni of Wacky, George Williams. And Williams decided not to take the PD job in New Haven, Connecticut, and Bert, the manager, had called Terrell asking who he knew might be a good program director for New Haven, Connecticut. And Terrell recommended me for the job. So that's how I wound up leaving WKLO. I left WKLO for my first programming job in New Haven, Connecticut. I think in retrospect, probably Terrell was trying to save his sanity so he could do his show in the afternoon drive. Because he had this young punk, Bill Henderson, there going, hey, I want to be a PD. Can you tell me this? Well, why do we have... And I'm asking these questions a million miles an hour. And I think he thought I could be a talented PD, but I think it was self-preservation, too.
Now, how long were you at that radio station that you left KLO for?
4 years.
Did that take you up until the time that you came back to KLO?
Yes, it did. Yep.
Now, how did you get the job back at KLO as PD?
Well, I'm a little foggy on how I got the call or how the call came about. But the station in New Haven where I was had been sold, and I remember that we all had to try to find another gig because they were going to change format and everything. And I had called Ernie Gudrich, who I really hadn't spent much time with as a jock. You know, he was the manager at WKLO. I had heard there was an opening down there, and he said, yes, come on down and talk to me. And I think our reps were the same, as I recall. In those days, it was Eastman. And Eastman had put in a good word for me, because they liked what I had done in New Haven. And I came down to talk to Ernie Gudrich, who was a kind of a laid-back manager. You know, opinionated, but laid-back. He described to me that the radio station had changed, that Terrell had left, and that Carl Truman Wigglesworth was the program director. And at Ernie's direction, he wanted a kind of a... Terrell was a formatic guy and a stickler for certain detail, okay? Carl Truman, as I have been told the story, and I wasn't there, so I can only repeat what I've heard, and that is from Ernie that he was more of a laid-back type of program director. And he wanted somebody more in control programming the radio station, because they were not cutting the numbers.
Wacky was cleaning their clock.
Yeah, right. As Ernie later described it to me, he said, every time I hire a PD, I always hire the opposite. In other words, he hires a strong guy and a less controlling guy, a stronger guy, a less controlling guy. You know, he wanted somebody who had a firm idea of what the hell they wanted and could put it on the air and make it happen. And that's how the whole thing came about. I went down, I interviewed. He liked me. I liked him again. He thought I could do the job. I wanted the job because it was great to come back to the station that I did the night show on. And Wacky was doing an outstanding job at that time.
All right. Do you remember some of the changes you put into place as soon as you came to KLO?
What we really did is we put a stationality together for the station. I gave it a stationality where the station kind of had a sound that followed. You know what I mean? Every show kind of had the same type of presentation. And we had some great, great jocks there. We had Lee Gray in the morning show, and that's an interesting story, too, the first time I met Lee. Lee was a fabulous, fabulous air talent. I mean, just had a voice that was unbelievable. But he also was a very cocky guy. I think Terrell described him a little bit in some of his presentation on the KLO site. But when I got there, he was doing morning drive. I had put in some format changes to start effective Monday. And I was quite aware that Lee didn't want to really follow directions and wanted to do his own thing. So I came in the first morning that we started. The new format was to go in at 6 a.m., and I came in at, I think, 5:45 in the morning. And I was in my office waiting for Lee to go on the air. A couple of minutes to 6, I talked to the overnight man. I went into him, and I said, well, where's Lee? And he said, well, Lee doesn't get here until about 6:15 or 6:20. I said, oh? Well, I had kind of had a little inkling that that was happening, okay? I had kind of picked that vibe up through the halls and the station. So at 6:15, Lee comes strolling in the lobby. And I was in the lobby, and I said, Lee? He said, good morning, Bill. Good morning. I said, Lee, go to my office. We went in there, and we had a screaming match at 6:20 in the morning between he and I. Because I'm a hyper guy, and he was a hyper guy, and nobody was going to tell him what to do. And I had a new format in there, and I wanted it done, and I wanted him there, and I believed in him, and why, you know, and if you're going to not, you know, what, you know, that type of conversation. I remember we were both screaming at each other in my office with the door shut at 6:20, and we finally looked at each other, and we both started to laugh. He stood up, shook my hand, and he said, Bill, you'll never have another bit of trouble with me ever again. And he walked in, did his show. He was just fabulous.